Good evening, everyone. Will you please pray with me? O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, Babaji, Lahari Mahasya, Swami Sri Yukteswarji, Paramahansa Yogananda, beloved Mother, saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King. Bible reading tonight comes from the Psalms, the 23rd Psalm, some of the most beautiful words I think ever written. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Of course, yesterday we had this tremendous tragedy happen to us, to our country. Planes crashing into buildings and taking of lives. There are times that can shake the world, and I think this is one of them. I sent out an email and got several responses and got some lovely responses and just love and good wishes and all the rest of it, but also some very interesting comments and questions about this path, about our attitude in prayer, in doing one's duty. And so I thought I would read the gist of the questions and some of my responses, and have some thoughts around this path and how to approach such things. This email comments that they liked my story about Mataji very much. Thought it was great when I first read it in the book, and again in your note to us. But I got into a little tangled up on forgiveness tonight. Perhaps it is possible to forgive and do my duty
both at the same time. I put myself in the place of the president, or perhaps one of the operatives, should they ever get close to the perpetrators of these aircraft killings. Now, am I supposed to, as a sadhaka, forgive the perpetrators? But at the same time, I cannot extricate myself from my sense that as your president, or as an operative who finally gets close to the perpetrators of these crimes, I must defend my tribe. Failing to do so would leave my country vulnerable to further attacks. Surely I must act against those who wish to harm my tribal members, perhaps even take quite violent actions. I don't mean to suggest that I think I have a license to run about rashly on some sort of killing spree to purge any real or imagined enemy of the country, but quietly, carefully, deliberately, resolutely make that plan that will not fail and set about putting it into action to simply and thoroughly take care of business. And so it brings up the question of doing one's dharma as president or as defender in charge of defending the country, or as a policeman or anybody else, somebody in the military. And can you forgive someone and take an action, even a lethal action, against someone? And so this is my response. I see no contradiction in doing one's dharma or duty for the protection of the country and praying for the souls of those who perpetrated the crimes. Of course, it is the duty of the president and law enforcement to stop crimes, and when crimes have been committed, to bring those who committed the crimes to justice. For them not to do this is neglect of their duty, and the world would suffer because of it. When praying for another soul, I pray for the light of God to fill their hearts and minds. When a person is filled with light, they cannot possibly do something that goes against his will. Therefore, praying for that person and having them face the karmic situation they have put into place is perfectly compatible. In fact, the sooner they feel the pain of those that they have injured, repenting for what they have done, the sooner they will evolve and become a blessing to the world instead of a curse. One additional thing, prayer as I think of it is not to change God, but it is to make ourselves in perfect alignment with God. The comfort we feel goes out from us in a vibration, and that is what makes for the changes. As Master used to say, change yourself and you will change thousands. Another question came as this individual was to join us in spirit in meditation last night. I woke up early this morning, I think it was around 5:30. For the most part, my inner world was very much unsettled this morning, even before I noticed the news. I did a lot of clearing and charging to try to stabilize myself. It took 3 or 4 hours, and since then I've been in a relatively calm state. But this evening, as I thought about moving to my blanket to join you all in meditation, I felt a very distinct upliftment. Just thinking about moving to my blanket started the inner stirring. I was in a calm state to begin with, but this was quite noticeably different, almost like I was glowing or glistening inside. Quite pleasant. So then it occurred to me, while sitting on my blanket, many people lose their lives today to a violent criminal act. I agree to participate in a meditation with all of you, and I experience a noticeable inner perk. Chaos out there, the light within, seem quite incongruous. I'm not arguing with the gift giver here, just making an observation. And my response was, yes, why not a perk? That spark of light is what the world is needing, so why not bring your part of God into the mix? There are plenty of people to feel the loss. It is God giving to you and through you the calm, uplifting, and even delightful feeling of the Comforter. After all, this is all his doing, ultimately, and he has not wanted us to get into the snares of the play to the exclusion of him. I am very glad you have made yourself available to the Giver of Light at a time when the world is definitely needing it. Thank you for sharing your part of God. Oh, there's a P.S. We had wonderful meditation last night, filled with peace and bliss. This is how God fights terrorism. There are those times when we have extreme calm and even delight in the most trying of circumstances. Maybe it's the old guilt that kicks in and makes us think that we ought to be feeling bad instead. And this last one is on the nature of prayer. And the question was, when you pray for someone and you're already feeling your union with God, no words come, no sense of duality is there, how is it that you pray? Is that prayer? Is that, do you bring the mind down to a realm of duality in order to say a prayer? So this is my response. Yes, residing in the light is prayer of the highest kind. Prayer does not need to be of a dual nature. There may be times of being in that light and someone or some situation comes to mind. By residing in the light, you are manifesting that light, and it is a prayer of the most perfect kind. You can also feel that all those people and the places are right within you. You may feel the upset or difficulties, just as you would sense some part of your body. By residing in the light, you will feel the power of God permeating it all and feel the situation change, all the while feeling it right within yourself. So you see, there are many ways to pray that do not fit into the standard definition of using words to ask for something. Let your spirit guide you in these ways, and you will feel the power of prayer move very powerfully through you. Actually, prayer is not to change God, it's to put ourselves in alignment with the infinite light and resources of which we are one with. So simply pay attention to what brings you and keeps you in that alignment. Of course, if you try something and it takes you away from that alignment, let it go and seek that connection if it is absent, or if you are wishing to deepen it. All my love and prayers.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you a story from Andrew Bobby? Mm-hmm. He was talking about dispassion and letting go of the fruit if you are called upon to do something difficult. And he used the example of if you need to kill a dog to save three cats, then do it as your duty. And dispassion, and let go of the fact that you have to take a life.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you were talking about Dharma and Jack Becky.
One time, at service, Mother was asking questions, and so she asked a question. That if someone had a bomb and they were about to kill 100 people, the only way that you could stop them is to shoot and kill them. Would you do it? So there was general silence after she asked the question. She was looking for volunteers. And I don't know, I think there may have been one or two answers. And I was sitting off on the side thinking that I was well out of the line of sight. Then she said, David, what would you do? I said, well, Mother, I would kill the person and take whatever karmic consequences there would be for that. She said, in that case, there would be no karmic consequences. So in reading, you know, I don't know how Jesus would answer a question like that. He, in general, his teachings are very much of the pacifist. It's better to give your own life than to take somebody else's and try to rectify it that way. But in that kind of situation, I don't know what he'd do. But we do have the examples from India of Rama and Krishna, both as kings, both with responsibilities and duties to the general populace for their protection, for the upholdment of Dharma. And there very much the message is, you must do your duty. And if you don't, then you suffer because you're not fulfilling what you came to do. And society in general suffers. So we must have protection. And people who want to create mayhem and violence must be brought under control. And thank God that there are people, good quality people, who are willing to do that and to take that job on. We need people like that in the current day world.
Do you remember that story about the Buddha, where he kills someone who's he knows is going to destroy 500 people?
No.
And the saying that came out of that is, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him.
I was hearing a Christian discussion this morning, a woman calling in and saying, well, but Jesus believed absolutely in nonviolence and turning the other cheek. And then another person called in and said, well, that mostly what the Christian church takes the teaching from is from Romans, that says it is wrong for an individual to kill, but that a government has the right to be able to give justice, and not only has the right, but has the duty to reprimand and give justice, and if necessary, take a life. So they were making that distinction.
Yeah. You know, to the setting that you described at the beginning of this, if you're a law enforcement person, an operator, whatever, and you have the opportunity to do what needs to be done, it's your responsibility to do it, to preserve further lives. And if you fail to do that, you're going to inherit the karma for their future deaths.
Right.
So you can't not do your duty.
Right.
What's missing in the story of Jesus is an explanation of what a person would do to save another, not yourself. He's clearly saying that from within your own understanding of high principle, you should give your own life for someone else. And you should sacrifice your own life. If in the case of Mother gave, I don't think there is equivalent thing to the in Jesus' teaching. He's telling you to turn your cheek and take the both the embarrassment and the abuse. He's not saying what is to be done in the other circumstances.
To protect lives.
To protect lives and Dharma. And so it's, probably there's enough other evidence of Jesus holding a position that you should do as your Dharma dictates.
Those words, sacrifice your own life, does it mean allow someone to kill you, or does it mean to set aside your own interests and do what is necessary to support another person? I don't remember the situation around which that was
Jesus asked. Doesn't push it to the point of death, does he?
Well, he does in his own case. He's the Lamb of Innocence, and he offers up his own life for the sake of others.
Greater love has no man but that he lays down his life for another man. So he just gives it in that respect of sacrificing yourself for somebody else, but he doesn't say what to do if in the circumstance Mother gave you.
Right.
But all the other religious teachings in Judeo-Christians say that human life is valuable, and your own life is more valuable than a madman's life who's going to kill a bunch of people.
And how does that then align with forgiving another person? In my note that I sent out, talked about forgiving these people who are perpetrators of these crimes. And I think tied up in the idea of forgiveness oftentimes is a permission. You know, there's this link that if I forgive you, what I'm saying is what you did is all right. And to make a separation there and say, I can pray for your soul. I can see you filled with light and want the best for you and not be giving permission
that's
for what you've done.
Though. That's something different. I think it's not forgiveness, it's something different. You pray for their soul. You don't have to forgive their act. Their act is wrong. It's wrong. I don't forgive you. I wouldn't forgive those men that act. I can pray for their eventual soul, and that next lifetime they come back, and they've paid their karmic debt, and they go towards the light. Mm-hmm. But we don't have to forgive them. I don't think.
We do have to forgive. I think we always have to forgive. If we don't forgive, it's like a ball and chain weighing us down.
I think that's been a misunderstanding of forgiveness, and I've been listening to some Jewish teachings on that, that it's a misunderstanding of forgiveness.
You don't have to condone the sin to forgive the sinner.
Well, I don't know that you even have to forgive the sinner. I think that you have to let go of your attachment and the hatred. But you don't have to say. I mean, God can forgive. Inevitably, God does forgive by allowing that person to work the karma off.
I would differ with you in that the letting go is the forgiveness.
No, I don't think so. But that's just my new understanding of that.
Yeah,
that
forgiveness does not mean permission. And it does not mean saying, if you do some wrong to me, and I say, at some point I'm able to let that go, and say, that is forgiveness. Now, let's say that you steal something from me. In my forgiving you, I'm not saying it's all right that you stole from me, but I'm letting go of whatever resentment or whatever I might be holding towards you. That is the forgiveness, that letting go.
I think it's just what this person was arguing is that the definition of forgiveness has gotten kind of slightly changed, so it wasn't that person's understanding anymore that that was forgiveness.
I'm just giving my definition of forgiveness.
Yeah, I think that's,
otherwise, what is forgiveness?
Forgiveness does not mean condoning a wrong.
What would be forgiveness then? What are you doing?
What Christ is doing. But that is somehow or other of washing the sins. And
do
I don't know that we can do that.
Do you think that when people were nailing him to the cross, he was saying, it's all right to nail somebody to a cross?
Of course not.
So, but he was forgiving them. Yeah. So what was he doing?
I'm thinking he can. I'm not sure that I can.
But what was he doing?
When he said, Father, forgive them because they know not what they do.
When he said, forgive them, what was he doing?
Well, in a sense, he was, it's tricky because in a sense, he's saying, the sins have been forgiven. You do not have to pay that karmic debt.
No.
No.
Confusing forgiveness, condoning, and indulgence.
Then what is he saying?
He's letting go of it personally. But he's not saying that they're not doing something wrong.
He's saying, Father, forgive them. Not his letting. Now he's not saying, I'm letting go of this.
You separate out the threads, though. Okay, when you first answered, you said, I could never forgive the act. That changed the subject, and that's why Al said, you could forgive the person, but not the act. And that's getting confused here too, but you raised another point, which is, if Jesus forgives, does the person not pay any karma, and nor do any karma? This is a different kind of thing entirely, and maybe Jesus, only God can do that.
The reason I ask that is because it goes to the definition of what forgiveness is. What is he saying when he says, Father, forgive them?
The act versus the person.
What is? Mm-hmm. So I've been asking a blessing for them by connecting it with God. He's giving them a blessing.
She's raising another point, which is that Jesus has the power to forgive sins. You see,
in the Christian.
But is that different than us?
Well, yeah, it's a good point.
Isn't he setting the pattern for all mankind?
Can I forgive somebody a sin? Somebody steals something from me, and I say, I forgive you. Mm-hmm. Do they not have to pay a karmic debt now because I say I forgive them? They still have to pay that karmic debt.
Jesus argued that the Son of Man had the power to forgive sins. It was a radical teaching then, it is today.
Well, I guess it depends on whether one believes at that point he's thinking of himself as, you know, the complete Son of God, or whether it's just being said as the Son of Man.
Mm-hmm. Sounds to me like the Son of Man means any of us can, even before we achieve that.
Well,
because that whole thing is symbolic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about forgiveness. In praying for our souls, we are helping bring light into their lives. Would forgiving them have the same kind of correlation? Helping the light into their souls?
I think so. Let's take whoever these people are who are doing this. I'm praying for the people who lost their lives. I'm praying for the people who've been hurt and injured and scared, and praying for the families. And I'm praying for these individuals who perpetrated the crime. What am I doing when I'm praying for them? For me, I would like to see them filled with that light. Because being filled with that light, my belief is they would find repulsion in what they did. The light and the darkness can't exist together, coexist. So by that light coming up in them, it changes them. And that's what I want. If I'm operating out of revenge, I want them to suffer because they created suffering. Very natural human response. But by transcending what they did and going directly into their soul, I'm just setting that aside. I'm saying justice should be served, and there are people to carry that out. But as an individual, and especially from a distance, and it's not my duty to kind of search them out and bring them to justice, I can best serve them by seeing the light. And my definition of forgiveness is letting go. I let go of my anger, my hatred, my resentment, whatever is separating me from you, I let that go. And I'm setting aside the act. That's not what I'm focusing on. I'm going to that person.
Seeing it the way I see it is just the whole thing is God carried the whole thing out.
Mm-hmm.
And so the act, in an earthly sense, was evil.
Mm-hmm.
But God was behind it all. So forgiving the soul and saying, thanks for helping out, basically, the whole tree.
Yeah. Mother talked about it in there's two different ways of looking at things. And one is from the human perspective, and one is from the divine perspective. And sometimes there's confusion because you get people who are dealing on two different levels, and this idea of it's all God and everything is God and nothing lies outside the province of God. Therefore, God was in charge of this whole activity, everything that happened. And that's the divine perspective. There's nothing but divine. And we exist both as divine and as human. From a human perspective, we can say that was wrong. And it created suffering, and it created pain, and we can condemn it and say that that was absolutely wrong. Mother was of the state that she could hold both at the same time perfectly. And people have varying abilities, and God moves through you in different ways. Sometimes you're lifted up, and you just see it all as God's play. people are making entrances, people are making exits, here's this play going on, and it's all God. And it's equally legitimate to take a look at it and, from a human perspective, and say, this is repulsive. This is not of the light. And this is duality of light and darkness. Yeah, but it's very legitimate to look at it and say, this is all God.
The other thing is, too, that like Khalil Gibran asked in one place in his book, who is more guilty, the murderer or the murdered?
Mm-hmm.
Karma.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one, I think, should pray for everybody involved in something like that, because they are our brothers and sisters, after all, no matter how rotten their actions. But, and if somebody is injured or whatever, we should bless our family to help them, rescue them, whatever needs done.
And as I said here, my viewpoint is prayer is not so much to change God. God's always beaming out to us goodness, light, radiance, everything. Do we really think by us saying, God, I want you to be more light, that God manifests more light? But I think we turn into both a receiver and a sender. And through prayer, we align ourselves with that light, and we become a channel, or we become a sender of that light. So it changes us, our own attitude. And I think that's where forgiveness comes in, is that forgiveness in letting go of the darker, our own darker nature that's reacting to something. We then begin to manifest that light. We come into a state of peace, even delight.
I'm not saying that I don't think on that higher level. I'm talking just in terms of definition of words. But I do see all this as God's play. And on that level, as you talk about the human and the divine level, on the human level, I think it's sometimes so important to understand what we're saying in our words. And I'm just saying that I have been hearing these different definitions sometimes of now forgiveness and what exactly does it mean. So I'm still trying to figure it out in my own mind. But because inevitably, I mean, we all are a part of this play, and the terrorists who flew the plane are part of the play, and the people that died all were meant to die and everything else. But I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't know personally on a human level with when I forgive someone, is their karma gone? I don't know.
What I'm saying is that forgiveness changes us. What we're letting go of is our own darker, lower nature. And when we let go of that, then we're able to manifest the light.
That's true, but does it have any effect? I mean, it has an effect in that person coming vis-a-vis me. But if does it change his karmic payment for that act?
Yeah, and that's I haven't addressed that.
I was just wondering when I asked that, because we were asking about can Jesus forgive and can we forgive, and does our forgiveness wash away the sins in the same sense that the Christians believe that Christ can do?
I don't think that Jesus washed away the sins of the world, because we still have sin plenty with us.
but I'm just that concept of
can the guru
take on the sins of another?
I think
the guru can.
I think they can.
Well, one of the things, I mean, the thing that just comes to mind is what David wrote about Master. If you change yourself, you change thousands. I mean, what is that? That, to me, that answers that question.
But does
you
it,
change
does
yourself?
It,
yeah. You change
well,
thousands.
I think that's true, but does it take that person's karma?
You change yourself, you change thousands. I mean, what is karma? What that's changing the light.
I think it's the person having to move towards that light.
You move towards the light, and Master's saying, you change thousands to the light. You're not changing thousands to the dark.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand that. But does that price have to still be paid? Okay, so let's say I rob somebody, and then I come in contact with somebody who's on a spiritual path and is influencing me. And I say, oh my goodness, I'd much rather be like that person, and I'm going to start looking towards God. Don't I still have to pay for that robbery that I committed? And in wanting to go towards the light, I would want to pay for that. Mm-hmm. I would want to pay for that.
Well, mother's answer to David was, then you don't have a karmic.
If you've done it for somebody else. I robbed completely personal. I wanted that thing that person had. I need to pay for that. And I will pay for that if I'm going towards the light. What's all this karma we're all working off? I came in contact with mother. Would I have any more karma if I didn't have things to work off in my own life?
It's a fascinating question, and it's much of what the rabbis and the Sadducees had a big time problem with Jesus around. Who are you? Only God can forgive. And you're saying that you can forgive? You're putting yourself equal to God. And here you are, a man.
He was equal to God. He and his father were one. And you know something else that mother said that...
But that was a very big sticking point, that exact question.
Mother did take karma. Tons of my karma. But I'm on this earthly body. I'm not God realized. I obviously am working out karma that I incurred in the past, that I need to work off, that I want to work off as a spiritual person wanting to go to God. Mm-hmm. Should I give it to this person or give it to that person? You know, I need to work that off. Mm-hmm. That's part of what I'm doing. And by somebody showing me the light, it doesn't make it disappear. Mm-hmm. It can make it go faster because I'm focused on that path. But I think I still have to pay for it.
Master said in his two-volume thing on the Gita, there's one place in there, we were talking about that one time, Dave, and he says that a person on the spiritual path can, you know, through meditation, I don't remember how he phrased it, but the thought it left me with is that one can wind up paying less karma or less
severe
karma.
Sure, of course,
That's going to be for real because I'm still alive today.
Oh, I think so, and it can move faster. I'm just saying that we still have our whatever is allotted to us and whatever our guru did not take.
Well, sure.
We still have to do that.
Something that Mother says that she says, resist not evil. And this goes back to forgiving versus not forgiving. When you, every thought, word, and deed carries its own vibration, and when you send that out, it's sent out into the world. It has an effect whether you are aware of it or not. And if you refuse to forgive, and when you think of someone you feel bitterness or hatred or anger or whatever, you are sending that to that person, and instead of them receiving light, they're receiving more darkness. And if you are able to let go of that and hold them in your heart with light and with love and with forgiveness, that's what they're going to receive, whether they're conscious of it or not. And that's, you know, every time a human is able to do that, we're chipping away at the darkness. And I think that's really important to be able to do that and to not feed don't feed darkness.
And what's of course very challenging for any sadhaka is to be involved in a manhunt or, you know, these policemen who are going after these people or the army or whoever it is, the president who's organizing this, and can you hold forgiveness for the individual and still bring them to justice and say, I need to fulfill my dharma here? Bhishma asks Duryodhana, Karna says, can you fight without anger? And their noble kind of truth around that is you engage, you do what you're supposed to do, but you do it without attachment, you do it without anger. I think as mentioned in here, you take care of business.
And that's like the highest that a loving parent can be. When you have to deal with your wayward child and there's a real detachment that can come when
you are called that. Yeah. So That was the question, and I think that it is possible. In fact, we're called upon to do it that way. But that's a tremendous mental discipline. Because you also want to get them.
You're helping the tribe, the group. Those terrorists thought they were doing a good deed. Is there karma?
If they're sincere, would they be not reaping karma because they
really
truly believed and felt they were doing the will of God? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that reaches into the heart of a man. I have a difficult time connecting with making an attack on civilians who are just caring about their business as a military, you know, strike. That's difficult. But one idea that I thought of was that if we had an opportunity with Hitler, say, in the early days, to put a bomb into some eatery where he and his cronies were having lunch and just cut that business off before it got started, would we do it?
Yeah.
And there, those are, you know, from that small perspective, those are innocent victims there.
There's another perspective to this, too, though, using the Hitler example. There is such a thing as interfering with karma that people have got to pay off, namely his victims or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it can take on a burden for that unless you're real sure what you're doing, that you really guided it inside.
Yeah.
It's not all that clear cut.
That's where ultimately you have to become clear.
Yes.
Inside. And that's also where forgiveness helps. It's letting go of the anger and our own internal darkness so we can have that clarity to know what to do. To have that connection, that inner connection.
Well, I'm sure there were several masters of this world who knew that yesterday was going to happen, but I don't hear them calling the FAA or whoever warning about it ahead of time. They were not interfering.
It's very interesting. In some of the talks that we have of Master, he said that Jesus and Babaji had tried to divert World War II, but that karmic forces took society in that way. People were aligning themselves and all the rest of it. What they were able to do was to influence Hitler's mind into invading Russia, which, of course, about 80% of the war was fought on the Russian front there, and made a huge difference. It would have been a very, very different outcome if he hadn't had to contend with that Eastern Front. So that there is a certain amount of karmic unfoldment that needs to be there, and that only by intuition can we know when to move in and when not to move in. But until then, we do have to use our own reason, human reason, and compassion. But that's why Papa said you can do no good until you're God realized. Because there's no predictable good anyway. Because even in trying to do good, you may be interfering with the...
Ask God within yourself, you don't get an answer, and then you got to use whatever good sense you still have.
And that's what Master talks about, praying to God and say, you guide my reason, you guide my will, because you still are called upon to act.
Yes.
I'm thinking that the people who need prayer and light right now are the leaders of these countries that have to decide what to do. And do they go in and level a country?
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking for a bad regime that's hidden somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's going to be quite a lot of decisions that are going to be made, and hopefully in the light.
Yes.
Yes. Kill a bunch of other innocent civilians, though, hoping you get the bad guy.
Is the potential possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So you're exactly right. I mean.
So this is something that can be influenced. It hasn't already happened.
Right. Right.
About the karma, Kate asked, where is that karma? And I was thinking, where is that karma held? Put in your enemy's heart. And when that enemy forgives you, what he does is he releases that part of the karma. Mm-hmm. And when we forgive others, we unclench the fist that allows us to hold each other together in that negative way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you can do as a human being. When you get to the point of Jesus' state, not just Jesus,
mm-hmm.
but when you attain that, then you have control of the whole world, and then you can dictate that karma. If this karma is held in many people's hearts against a hatred against somebody, and Jesus forgives them, he is speaking for them all. And they've either all attained that state of enough lifetimes distance away from that where they've lost it, or he is actively changing the world and changing those people's heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to think that what we contain within ourselves is an interaction, required interaction with somebody else that they don't want to go through. Especially if it's something they've done negatively to us. We hold the power over that person to forgive it and to let go of the pain and swing. And that's got to be the great truth teaching that he was giving, that we must love one another as ourselves. That is identifying all as one.
And that is just self-defense, because we incur karma by failing to let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
We can't not let go of it.
And that's Krishna's teaching us to eat, to breathe, is action. So to think that you can live in this world without action is not possible. So you have to act. You have to act. And that's where the story of Dharma comes in. We have to act according to our own highest light, however that guides us. And if these terrorists, as you were saying, Treva, are acting according to their highest light, there's a lot of people who've been involved in war. There's a lot on the, talked about World War II, there's a lot of people who did a lot of killing on what we call the good guys' side. But they're the good guys because we think we're the good guys. So there's a lot of actions. There are German soldiers too who are just doing their duty, who weren't politically motivated. They were being asked to do something and they responded. And I think that's where getting into absolutes is difficult. You have to be able to look into the heart of an individual.
And if you fail to do what you need to do, you will be given the opportunity over and over again until you get it.
I think these people, terrorists or whoever, may believe they're doing something great according to their lights, but one can have a deluded belief in things that's incorrect. The fact that they think something doesn't necessarily place them in harmony with God or creation.
But there is a difference between a sincere error and somebody who's out in cruelty, and I mean they know what they're doing and they want to do it.
The motive is different.
I think in the case of following Christ's teaching, and this is, and turning the other cheek, I think is that we as a nation cannot, whoever these people are, the actual terrorists, we don't know yet. The fact that certain people in certain countries were cheering when the buildings were coming down and people were dying, I think that's the thing that we can turn the other cheek on, is not to say that if our country decides to retaliate to some country and many people are killed, is not to stand and cheer because all those innocent people are dying, and to be higher minded and to turn the other cheek in that respect. And while we can wish for justice to the perpetrators, not be cheering when a whole people are wiped out innocently.
Yeah.
That's wrong, and that's where people can hold that anger and hold that hatred.
The Hatfield and the McCoys that just go on for generations.
And so it's a different thing to wish for for justice than it is to have that revenge and that hatred.
Yeah.
Those people are taught that when they die in that manner, they immediately go to the Muslim heaven.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's what happens, but that's what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to leave out the word innocent victims. There's none of us are innocent.
Yeah. People who have not... it's true. I mean, it's karmic, as you say, it's a karmic thing. But I'm saying no matter how guilty, you know, we are in that respect, I can't think that we would jump up and down and cheer when somebody, a building is coming down and killing these people that happened overtly, gone over and killed somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't even cheer if it's somebody being killed that is guilty. You know, we should just look at it in a dispassionate way and say justice was done, but not say we are so glad that they died mm-hmm. in a horrible death.
But isn't it fascinating to think that each one of those people could have had a different day yesterday if they had forgiven, if they had followed the true light, the way out that Jesus teaches, if they had, because clearly they had a karmic connection with these people who killed them. But isn't it fascinating to think that if they had had an epiphany and they realized, whether they understood it or not, they realized that Jesus was right and they had attained a higher state of consciousness where they didn't have karma they were holding for others, not just their own, because that interaction is what karma is all about anyway, that they could have walked away from that just hours before. They could have been someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And that each of us...
And some did. Some left the building.
And some people walked into the building mm-hmm. on a day that they never were going to.
They interviewed a man who said, I was getting to work, but I was late.
Mm-hmm.
And it came down before I got there.
Mm-hmm.
He said, isn't it strange how
he attained something just in the previous life, and he listened to Jesus' teachings and understood them to the extent that he did,
mm-hmm.
Christian's teachings. He followed them. Each time we do good, we benefit ourselves and others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can move back and forth between this human and the divine. And from a human standpoint, we can say that, these people were innocent in the sense that they're just carrying on their lives. They weren't actively going and creating harm for somebody else. But you stand back and you see this larger picture, and you see that these are complex interactions going on. And that ultimately... I go back to this television show that I saw one time of the making of Gandhi. And if you saw the movie, there's just a heart-rending scene there where there's a peaceful gathering of civilians and the military comes in and they line up and they just start firing into these women, children, everybody getting mowed down. So in this television show about the making of the movie of Gandhi, they showed that scene being set up and then being carried out. As soon as the scene was over, cut. Okay, everybody got up, walked over. Here's the British soldiers and here's the Indians with blood on them. And they sit down to these big tables and eat lunch. And they're laughing and, carrying on. And I thought, what a wonderful analogy for this play that we're all involved in. And none of those actors, if you asked them, if this situation were being carried out, would you think that the British were right? None of them would say, oh yeah, we think that that's the right thing to do. And yet they had held no malice towards one another by the time they sat down and got out of role and were eating lunch all together. And I thought, in this play, this colossal play that we have going on here, we are both engaged in it. We're a part of it. We feel the feelings that are connected with it, and yet we stand apart from it. Ideally, that's how God wanted us to live this life. He wanted us to have that little bit of separation. But He also doesn't want us non-actors. He doesn't want us not involved. So how we stay engaged, how we stay connected, and how we stay separate, and keep that higher perspective, and so that we are not autonomous, or we're not numb to everything that goes on around us. None of the, if we look at the lives of the masters and the saints, they're not standing back, totally removed from everything. They're intimately aware of it and a part of it. And yet, they have this higher perspective that's always there.
And I think that sometimes a little bit of the danger of so-called New Age teachings, in that you have the higher perspective, mm-hmm. but they fail to see that sometimes, as you are an actor on the stage, and as the actor on the stage, you have the rules of that stage mm-hmm. environment. Mm-hmm. And so that when you see evil, and you can call it evil when mm-hmm. you're on that dualistic plane, come towards you, you have to say no.
Yeah.
You might know, oh, this is all your play, God, and oh, those people have karma.
But this person needs to be stopped.
You say no.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, when sometimes this philosophy gets a little mixed up, is that then people can kind of sit back and say, oh, well, you know, it's all a play, it's God's karma, it's this, I wouldn't want to get myself involved in that because I'm above this. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really have to be aware constantly, don't we, that we are in this mm-hmm. both levels, that Krishna went into that battle and he fought those people. Jesus went into the temple and threw those moneylenders out.
Yeah.
He didn't say, oh, gee, guys, I know. The church is doing what you do, you know.
Because they are the essence of compassion. And you can't look at somebody else's suffering, even though you can say, well, they're stuck. You know, they're in duality. Well, you know, I'm just going to sit back and not do anything at all. They are the heart of compassion. And when they can see where they can move and make a difference, they do. And they do it at the sacrifice of their own lives. They throw themselves into it completely. You cannot say that Jesus was not passionate. And so we live life with passion, and yet we have that separation. And we are both human and divine. And this is one of the great teachings of Mother, and she brings that out more than any other master that I know. That we're both human and we're divine. And as Mother would say, she would cry. She would feel things. She's not totally out of the picture. She was a human being, and she felt life. And she was passionate about life. And she was fully one with God. Yeah. She was complete.
And that's why Jesus could throw the moneylenders out, and at the end of it all, Father, forgive them, you know
yeah.
not what they do.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is this letter here of, can, you know, as president or as person who goes after these people, how does that fit with forgiveness? And to me, there's no contradiction that we can have that dispassion, that impersonal life, and still fully engage with life.
David, is there a difference between the president saying we need to defend our nation, and you mentioned this, that's okay, that's the good part of it,
mm-hmm.
defending our nation and doing what's right for the rest of the world, but what about if they're doing it purely for vengeance? They said, you know, you came after us, you killed our people,
mm-hmm.
we want you dead, plain and simple, we just want you dead, we hate you. And then,
then I think they're dwelling in a kind of their own personal darkness, and they're creating it. And of course, we talked about with the Hatfield and the McCoy, you know, you perpetuate things that way. And still, you cannot hold back from action. And certainly some people, if they did some military action, there's going to be some people involved who are just out for vengeance. They're going to be angry. They're going to be mad. They want to blacken somebody else's eye and bloody their nose, and they're going to do it. When it comes to individual freedom, the people who can engage with that and stay impersonal and keep that detachment and still act and say, this is justice, and it's the right thing to do, and we know it's the right thing to do, then I think they can stand free. They're the ones who can kill that bomber who's going to kill 100 people and not incur karma from it.
Yeah, that's the difference.
because they haven't darkened their hearts.
There's a difference in knowing why you're doing it.
Right.
So in the sense of, I'm still playing with the word forgiveness, let's take our president.
Mm-hmm.
He has this act that has gone against the country. He knows that he has to act in
mm-hmm.
some ways.
Mm-hmm.
So if he forgave them,
mm-hmm.
would he act still?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's my whole point. The two are not contradictory. In fact, when they executed Timothy McVeigh, he said, he prayed for Timothy McVeigh. And he said, forgive him for what he's done. President Bush. Not an easy person. I mean, he may have not had a lot of fans around that, because there's a lot of people angry about that, and they want their pound of justice. They want their pound of flesh. Jesus, you know, it's perfectly human to want an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But Jesus, his teachings was something else. And so was the Buddha's. And he says you transcend that.
Unless you're on the level of Mahatma Gandhi, who, as he was dying, said, Rama. You know, forgiving his assassin, for the rest of us, it takes time to forgive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Bush is not going to be forgiving by tomorrow.
Well, we don't know. We don't know what.
That's the inner heart of a man, and who can say, but you're right, forgiveness oftentimes is not, I mean, you don't stop yourself in mid-action sometimes and say, okay, I'm gonna forgive it. It's somebody like Gandhi. I mean, that's a signal of his inner perfection. Ram, Ram, Ram. As bullets are going into his body and he's sinking to the ground. That comes from a very purified mind. And I think it's something to attain towards. It's something that we should all be going for. And I think one thing where I would disagree with Gandhi, and Papa did, and Master did, and Mother did, is the absolute nonviolence. That there are times when you take violence, because that's what leaders a country. What Papa said about it is, he said, as he used a couple of different examples, but for instance around property, sadhus don't own property, but householders do. You have dependents, you have to have a home, you have to plan for the future. He says that's perfectly legitimate. But when it comes to sadhus, they don't do that. And I think that's a reasonable distinction. And maybe one that Jesus might agree with too, I don't know. He never spoke directly to it, so we don't know exactly what he'd say. But that there are those whose business it is to forgive, to be praying for the world, and they're not going to be the ones who are going to be taking military actions.
That's the inherent danger of an absolutist.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, nothing is. There are exceptions to everything.
Yeah. We had a wonderful professor who pointed out the irony in Gandhi, that the reason his fasts were successful when he wanted to change, and there's violence going on, and he would fast almost to death and say, no more violence, and finally the violence would stop. He said implicit in his death would be massive violence, and that was the blackmail that got everybody to calm down and quit creating violence. You can't separate it out. His was a threat of violence. First he was doing violence to his own body by killing it slowly, and he was having this monumental threat of violence in the society itself.
Interesting paradox.
Mm-hmm. Can't escape it. And that's where you get, if you just get wedded to one side of the equation, you run into that paradox eventually.
The Bible says that the great preserver destroys the enemies, the people he's trying to preserve. That's his song with the dual.
There's no way. And that's why going inside and finding out what God's direction is for you. And you can have righteous anger. I'm righteously angry about this. And it moves you into action. And it can be a positive thing.
If you think about trying to actively go hunting after someone, think of racing after someone to shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your dharma, as we talked about. It's one thing to think of it clinically. It's another to think of what it takes to run your fastest run.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have your heart in it, you won't quite get it.
No.
Because
they have their whole heart in not being shot.
And they have
they do.
Method acting. Where you really have to feel
like
they won't take
this method acting. Let's try to lift one of your fingers, like especially your ring finger, without having the other ones move. In the sense that you cannot really get the best result out of your body if you don't have righteous anger and will.
Yeah.
And that will can be all fanned by anger. How do you then separate the two
matters? But this dispassion also that's in the center of all of that really gives for the best actions, because it's there that you can stay in touch with that inner wisdom, and where if you're totally passionate and moving with that, it can carry you into places that you later regret.
Another karma.
Mm-hmm. And that's the karma, that's the darkness that begins to enshroud, because you have regrets. If you're a good person, if you're have that mind. You have.
The soldiers on D-Day, in that movie we saw, as they came up over the hill and they're being shot at themselves and they're shooting every German they can.
Mm-hmm.
Later, just a few seconds later,
mm-hmm.
they're shooting running Germans.
Yeah.
Like pigs in
people
like
trying
pigs in the
to surrender.
And there's a point there where the man of Dharma would stop.
Yeah.
And recognize exactly what Mr. said.
Yeah.
And other people are still the inertia, the momentum of that anger.
And from a human standpoint, totally understandable. Totally, and yet you know that those men, when they go back home and they feel bad. They will feel bad. They'll have nightmares. They'll feel bad about that. That will not be a proud moment for them. And this world is a rough school at times.
That's how a soul evolves into a Gandhi, too.
It is. It is. Yeah. It's exactly, we have to act. We have to act. Just think that we can just stand back and be totally devoid of action.
That's
not possible.
That's a soul lesson that will be burned into that soldier's head.
Yeah.
Burn.
It will be.
You are so painful. So you can be painful.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing about Gandhi, though. He did say that if you are acting out cowardice to be a pacifist, it's better to kill, be a killer.
Mm-hmm.
That is a higher position to be in than one of the cowards.
Mm-hmm.
And he objected to people saying it was passive.
He didn't like
not,
that.
He was an active
right.
That's a distinction that is really important to me. He was a very, very high-minded, great saint.
Yeah. Well, let us go inside. This has been a wonderful discussion to help clarify these things for us. But let us turn our hearts and our minds to this world. As was pointed out, there's some people who were celebrating this and other people, of course, feeling the tremendous sorrow and upset. And I think it certainly had its impact on all of us. But to soften our hearts, to make them a beacon of light, and let that go out to all suffering humanity. That's the perpetrators and the ones who are the recipients of this violence. And see this world being swept with light. That something traumatic like this can change the consciousness of the world. One of the things that came very powerfully to me, and I don't know the whole of it, but Mother talked about in her visions that she had during her crucifixion of planes crashing, people dying. And somehow it came to my mind that this is connected with those times that she had seen. I think it's a time that will stand out in history. And we can use it to perpetuate more violence, to perpetuate more darkness, or we can use it as a time for light. Time for light, as we talked about, is not non-action, not necessarily at all, but it is to do action in the right way, with the right attitude, and to bring light into this world. Certainly it must be thought that people who act this way are acting out of tremendous sense of pain and frustration themselves. To see this world filled with that light, to see that light sweeping across like a healing balm on the hearts of individuals, softening hearts and changing minds, bringing this world into harmony with light rather than darkness, into higher mindedness rather than the lower forces using it as an opportunity to wreak mayhem. A sense to feel and to see the upliftment of all mankind. Let us stand and send some healing alms. Dear God and all the great masters that are helping this world, all sincere souls who are beacons of light, let us all join together and make this time a coming of light, coming of upliftment, changing of the hearts, minds, and souls, all humanity. Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
To me in the Lord's Prayer that Jesus says, forgive us as we forgive our enemies. And I think it reflects a principle, actually, that we are forgiven as we forgive.